You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
To another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here, along with Sports Illustrated Vikings reporter Will Raggetz. And this is a fans-only episode, trying to do some episodes where we have a guest fans-only analyst, answerer. Will, you're doing a great job, by the way, on the Will Raggetz show. If people didn't catch your interview with former Viking Ben Lever, that was excellent. So what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. It's fun to be back on with you. I don't think we've done this since the combine. No, more recently than that. But I've been doing the weekly show, and it's fun to hop back on with you and answer some questions.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed your work, kind of getting some space here to be your own host. I think it was maybe the beginning of OTAs where we got together to kind of announce the show. So what I usually do to start a fans-only episode is I usually crack open a Diet Dr. Pepper, but they didn't have cans at the store. They only had bottles. So I don't know if people will be able to hear this or not, but I'm going to open the bottle.
Oh, there you go.
Did you get it? Did it sound?
I got like that loud and clear. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. So you know that Diet Dr. Pepper is being drinked here. It's just that they ran out of cans. I don't know, supply chain or something.
They're not sponsoring the show yet, are they?
This has become a huge internet controversy, actually. People are tweeting at Diet Dr. Pepper. They've had to mute their mentions. There's so many people who are trying. You know, the little guy from the commercials actually did tweet at me. I'm not joking about that. Somebody tagged even that little mascot that they have on the commercials, and he like responded. I don't remember what he said, but it was something like, "You're the man," or whatever.
Hey, that's a good step. It's a good Maybe I have to work something out in the future.
Really all about public pressure. Okay, so before we get into the questions that I have for us to answer, Will, the Vikings are apparently interested in Ndamukong Suh. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are that their defensive line is already pretty good on paper, and that would kind of be the one thing that they're missing is the guy with the pass rush pedigree like Suh has. I mean, they have Armon Watts as kind of like their designated pass rushing defensive tackle right now. And obviously like all defensive tackles need to play the run and they need to contribute against in the pass rush. But I mean, Suh, I think he still has some gas left in the tank. He's been a really kind of dominant in his prime pass rusher from the interior. But just imagine like a three down lineman front with him and Phillips and Tomlinson. And then you have Hunter and Smith off the edge. Like there's a lot of age there and there's some injury risk and all that. But on paper, that would be pretty impressive. Now, I don't know where they're going to get the money to sign him necessarily. And it seems like the Raiders and maybe some other teams are still kind of like in the front of that mix. But, hey, it's interesting at the very least.
I guess what I would say is, if you want to get excited about this, don't look up what he did last year by the PFF grades.
I didn't have that in front of me. I'm going off like more reputation right now than anything.
Yeah. And he had a really good game against Los Angeles in the playoffs. So not maybe completely washed, but graded 53rd among defensive tackles last year. And I'll see if I can get his pass rush win rate. But I mean, age would be the big factor here. You know what it kind of feels like? It feels very Sheldon Richardson-y from last year where we were like, yeah, man, 2018 Sheldon Richardson, what a monster. This Sheldon Richardson, not too bad, I guess. Okay. But I mean, I don't know how it couldn't be an upgrade from what they have outside of Armon Watts. I mean, it would have to be. And at this stage in his career, I mean, if he's looking to continue playing, nobody's showing up with $10 million a year. So the Vikings have like, what, 10.7 in cap space. They have to keep some for the season in case things happen. They have to sign other players. So, you know, $3 million or something. I mean, your offer can't be very big to Ndamukong Suh. And if you look at last year, he played almost 800 snaps. That's way too much for Ndamukong Suh. He would not be doing that here. He would be much more of a rotational role.
Yeah, I mean, he's had 6 sacks in each of the past 2 seasons. I just looked it up. But yeah, this is not like Detroit Ndamukong Suh. He's 35 years old. It might be a case where it's the bigger name than what you would actually be getting production-wise. But still, I mean, I don't think you can really argue, like you said, that it wouldn't be an upgrade from like James Lynch getting rotational snaps and like Jonathan Bullard and whoever else they have in the mix there. So I think it would be a floor raiser for sure.
So 44th out of 50 defensive tackles in pass rush win rate, or I'm sorry, in pressure rate for last year. So not exactly the old Ndamukong Suh, but I do think that playing as many snaps as he did probably factored into that he wouldn't have to be an every down player.
Yeah, if you cut those snaps in half, maybe his per snap productivity goes up.
Okay. No, actually, I know I had it right. It was a pass rush win rate that he was 44th. Sheldon Richardson was 34th. So I like the
Sheldon Richardson, who, by the way, is also still a free agent.
Right. Like this always happens where we get into June and some dudes just don't have jobs. You know, like got to be able to help somebody. Right. I think that he's one of them.
You'd think so.
You would think so. So there's all of your Ndamukong Suh takes in the event that the Vikings sign him. But like you said, it sounds like the Raiders are the leaders in the clubhouse there. So let's get into our fan questions. We will start with at @jholiday316. For fans only, hate doing this to myself and other Vikings fans, but following Will Raggetts and the episode with Will and Ben Lieber, how do you think a 2009 Vikes Colts Super Bowl would have gone? What do you think?
Should I start with this? Yeah. So Ben, as like is very understandable in our podcast, was very confident that like the Vikings would have won that game by 10 plus points. And I think I'll start by saying this. It would have been a very good game because I was looking into some of the numbers, basic stuff like yards per game, points per game, but also like the DVOA stuff, and EPA per play, which goes back all the way to 2009 and even further. And like that Colts offense was really, really good, especially just on an efficiency perspective. Obviously, Peyton Manning was kind of at his peak. Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, Joseph Addai, like they had weapons. So that matchup specifically, the Colts offense against the Vikings defense would have been really fun. The reason I think the Vikings probably are like 55-60% chance to win that game is because they had a big advantage defensively. The Colts were kind of average defensively, and they weren't as far behind offensively. The Vikings had a very good offense that year as well. And they also, I think, were better on special teams for whatever that's worth. Not much if you talk about the Vikings and like the idea of going to a Super Bowl and having to make a key field goal is probably pretty concerning to some Vikings fans, but you'd still like to get there and have that opportunity. So I think it would have been a really interesting game, but both the Saints and the Vikings and like 4 or 5 other teams were kind of a tier above that Colts team. If you look at DVOA. So I have to agree. I think the Vikings would have been favored in that game. Like just all the star power they had on both sides of the ball. There's an argument that they were one of the best teams in two or three best teams in the entire league that year. So I know that Colts team was 14-2, but some of the underlying stuff of their defense makes me lean towards the Vikings.
Yeah, I mean, for a 14-2 team, it was not one of Peyton Manning's absolute best offenses, which I think he won MVP that year, so he had great statistics. But in terms of how many points they actually put up, they were only 7th in total points that year, which usually Peyton Manning had his teams in the top five. And then, you know, when you look at the path that they had to take to get to the Super Bowl that year, it was not particularly difficult. I mean, they faced the Baltimore Ravens in the divisional round and then beat the New York Jets 30-17 in the conference championship. And it was not a special New York Jets team. It was a 9-7 New York Jets team that they beat in order to get to the Super Bowl. So I think that as far as 14-2 teams go, historically, maybe not the absolute most impressive that you've ever seen. The one concern that I would have for the Vikings, because I think they did have a stronger overall team and a legendary quarterback to go up against a legendary quarterback. So you're not saying, well, you know, you can't go toe to toe with that guy. Favre definitely could. And at the time, I was just looking this up. Favre's 09 season was one of the greatest seasons in terms of quarterback rating in history at that point through the NFL. So he had had obviously an amazing year, but I don't even know if people realize how incredible it is looking back, because we remember one particular moment. But yeah, he was so beat up. Would he have gotten back to full enough health by the time they got to the Super Bowl? Because it was gnarly what New Orleans did to him. And he's also Favre, so you have to be concerned about like the game-losing interception in playing against the Indianapolis Colts. But I think if you're talking about that matchup, and look, they went toe-to-toe with New Orleans. In fact, they really, by every measure outside of Adrian Peterson fumbles and a Favre interception, outplayed New Orleans in the Superdome in that game. So if we think they were a little bit stronger than New Orleans, and New Orleans handily beat the Indianapolis Colts, you could kind of say, if then, it really comes down to, would Favre have been 100% healthy or close enough? And would Favre have done something absolutely crazy in that game to throw an interception instead of the NFC Championship?
Yeah, and that's why it's fun to just like project. We have no idea what situations would have arose in that game. I will say, like, I think it would have been a really fascinating matchup, because that Colts team was super one-dimensional. Like, they were one of the top teams in the league in passing yards per game. They didn't run the ball at all. Like, they were dead last, I think, like 80 rushing yards per game. So that kind of neutralizes, to some extent, like, the Vikings' biggest defensive strength was nobody could run on them. So the Colts weren't going to be able to run the ball at all in that game. They would have been really one-dimensional, which, like, the Vikings' secondary had some good players, like Antoine Winfield, other guys like that. But, I mean, it's still, like, you're going against one of the best passing offenses in the league, one of the best quarterbacks of all time. Would the pass rush with Jared Allen have been able to get home if they were, like, they couldn't run the ball at all? You get in some tough down and distance situations. I don't know. There's a lot of things like that we can think about and talk about. But I think the answer in general is that the Vikings probably, if Favre is okay and in one piece, they probably 55-60% chance to win that game.
You want to hear a soul-crushing stat for Vikings fans about that Favre 09 season? It was the lowest interception percentage, not just of his career, in the whole league in the regular season for Brett Favre. And then he throws the interception in the biggest moment. I think that 2009 still probably ranks third for close calls of if they would have won or not. 1987 to me is the one where, yes, I think they would have beaten the Denver Broncos, because Washington just kicked the tar out of Denver in that Super Bowl. And then 1998, still a great chance, even though you're going up against an amazing all-time great Denver team, you know, 15-1, Randy Moss, all that. And then I think 09 is right behind that, if we were doing just percentage confidence. And 2017, I don't have a ton of confidence that they would have beaten Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. Yeah. So that's how it kind of ranks out for me. All right, let's move on to the next question here. Josiah via the email says, big fan of the podcast. Fans only question for you. The consensus on Kirk Cousins seems to be that he's a good quarterback, but you can't win with him at his current cap hit because it creates huge roster deficiencies everywhere. But at what cap hit could you be a legitimate contender with him at quarterback? In other words, what's the salary number that could pay him while still being able to afford a truly competitive roster that compensates for his shortcomings? I will let you go ahead with this one as well.
Okay. So this question is interesting. It's a really good question, actually. The thing for me is it's not like completely black and white like this. Like, there's not some magical number where you become a championship contender with Kirk Cousins. Like, in theory, you could be a championship contending team with Kirk Cousins at his, I think it's $31 million this year, and it's been like $35 million before. Like, you could. You would just have had to have drafted a lot better, especially in the middle rounds, the late rounds, find some contributors like that to stack your roster with young, affordable players, which the Vikings just haven't really done at a very high rate over the past four or five drafts. I mean, they've had some big hits with Justin Jefferson and players like that, but for the most part, that's been the issue, is that they haven't, like, the depth from those third, fourth, fifth round picks hasn't filled out the roster in a way that you can pay your quarterback as much money as they're paying him. And a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, who's a good, solid, above average quarterback, but not going to elevate things really. So, I mean, if I had to like choose a number that would make things a lot easier, I would say, yeah, 10 million, 15 million, even 20 million as a cap hit. Like, that gives you more kind of leeway to, maybe if you haven't been as successful in the draft, go out and get another couple impact free agents, or be able to retain guys when you do hit on them. Like the whole Stephon Diggs thing, there was a lot going on there, but maybe if the Vikings have more cap space, they can keep players like him or Xavier Rhodes or guys like that. So it would be a lot easier to build a contending roster if Cousins' cap hit was lower, but there's also a lot of factors that go into it.
Go to SotaStick.com. That is SotaStick, our loyal sponsor. Check out all of their great Minnesota-themed gear for your playoff run in hockey or for baseball season if you're headed out in the nice weather to a baseball game. That is SotaStick, SotaStick.com. Hats, T-shirts, hoodies if you need them for a cool evening in the summer. SodaStick.com has you covered.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I think you interpreted it broadly. I was thinking about it just for this year, but to your point, when you look back at the drafts, 2016 is a bust. No, yeah, 2017, they didn't have one. First round pick.
First round, yeah.
In 2019 is a bust. 2020 is Justin Jefferson, but the other first round pick is a bust. 18 is a bust. Yeah. Right. Just like, you can't miss on that many top draft picks or trade one to the Eagles for Sam Bradford, and then down the line expect to have a roster where you don't have to spend a ton of money on it. I mean, the thing about 2017 that's funny is, and this is, speaks to your point, is so they have this backup quarterback playing, but Sam Bradford was expensive. The thing about 2017, though, that year, they spent a lot of money at the quarterback position between Bradford and Keenum, is that Stephon Diggs, Eric Kendricks, Danielle Hunter, and Trey Wayans, all on rookie contracts. So that's
all three, from that one 2015
right, from the
draft.
One draft.
Yeah.
Right. And Anthony Barr was as well. So you have Pro Bowlers all over the place on rookie contracts. And then what happened after? They had to pay all those guys too. So how you draft around the quarterback absolutely matters. For this year particularly, we would have to work through what would they have had to really replace to be considered a team that's going to win 12 games, which I think is kind of the threshold for you're a real competitor. And I think the answer is probably they'd need about another $20 million. I mean, the offensive line and the interior. Let us not forget also that Ezra Cleveland did not have a great year pass blocking. So you have now a replacement right guard that might be a little better than Ole Udo, but is still not a lot better than Josh Klein. You have a center that can't pass block. You have a left guard that's still up in question. You would want to replace two out of those three guys probably. How about another wide receiver you would want to add? I think when you're playing a three wide receiver system, you'd want to go out and get someone better than Patrick Peterson on the free agent market at cornerback. And right there, we're probably talking about 20 to 25 million, which would make him, I think your first words were, a $10 million quarterback. That is about where I would see it, because the thing is that you have more talented quarterbacks in the league who are making even less than that. But if they don't have a superstar like roster all around them, they're going to be just okay and not great. But that's probably where it would have had to have been for me to walk into the season and go, man, every single position is pretty much locked up and is a really good player at all those spots. And I would probably still have some questions about the depth, because you'd still need another couple of players depth-wise, interior defensive line being one of them, defensive end. They're hoping what Patrick Jones, Janarius Robinson, DJ Wanham can be the rotational defensive ends. You're not super thrilled about that. So it is, but for all those teams, if you draft a quarterback and he's on a rookie contract, it's pretty much a rigged game, because you go into an offseason and go, all right, what do we need filled? We'll do that, dip, 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 and it's all set. Like Miami. Oh, we need another superstar receiver. Tyreek Hill. Here's all the money in the world. Right. And you just can't do that if you're the Vikings. So I think that that's probably the right answer, though, is probably around 10 million.
Yeah. I mean, even the Bengals last year, like they had Joe Burrow, and then they went out and they got like Trey Hendrickson, and they got just a bunch of free agents because they had so much money to spend. And that makes a huge difference when, I mean, that's the cheat code, is the rookie contract. Generally, like it, just the way it works, a Kirk Cousins type quarterback isn't going to be a 10 million quarterback, because someone out there demand wise, like the Vikings, is going to pay him a lot of money, because they're going to view that as being better than the unknown door. And they want to have a ceiling of winning 8 or 9 games a year. So yeah, I agree with you. I think 10 million cap hit for Kirk Cousins, the Vikings have a lot more opportunities to really upgrade the roster at some positions of weakness, or at least some question mark positions.
Well, it might melt my computer, but let me go to overthecap.com and just see about Ryan. What was Ryan Tannehill making when they were really good? 2021, Ryan Tannehill, last year they were the one seed. He was making 11 on the cap.
Yeah.
So that's right in our ballpark.
And now he's making, and now he has like a 36 million cap hit or something.
Yes. And that's why they're going to
make things a little tougher for the Tennessee Titans. Playoffs.
Yeah. 2019, Jimmy Garoppolo was making 17 million on the cap. Oh, I'm sorry, 20 million on the cap. So
even 20, though, like if Kirk's 31 this year, I believe, if you drop that down to 20, you can go get 2 big name free agents with the way that you could backload a 2 or 3 year deal. Like
it's really something to think about, the fact that he's the third highest cap hit in the league. Like this was redone to lower his cap hit, and that's where we're at. So great question, though. Appreciate that very much, Josiah. All right, this from at the Real Gabby, fans only question: which do you think is more likely, both Hunter and Za'Darius Smith are on the team next year, or both are gone? I'll let you do the honors for all of these. Well, go ahead.
Sounds good. I think it's more likely that they're both on the team. I mean, you never know, like something weird could happen, but Hunter's under contract for one more year after this one. And then there's a couple of void years on there as well, that they restructured his contract to make room for Smith. Smith's under contract for 3 years, but it's like after this year, like the Vikings could get out of it really easily without much dead cap the way it's structured. But I just think like the bond between them two that we've already seen this offseason, and that's been talked about a lot, like it would be surprising to me if this was just a 1 year thing. And something weird could happen, like I said, where the Vikings could be really bad and Kwesi Adofo-Mensah could decide like, hey, we took the wrong approach here. Let's start trading some veterans and rebuilding non-competitively. Or they could get hurt, and because they both have missed a lot of time recently, and maybe that alters the picture and the perception of things. But to me, I would be very surprised if neither one of Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith were on the roster next year. I just that you need pass rushers. I think the Vikings, unless they like weirdly suck, which I suppose is always possible, they're going to want to have at least one in 2023.
Well, it's almost like if neither one of them end up on the team in 2023, then they probably both got hurt, and the Vikings probably did suck in that part. I mean, they're just not going to be able to generate a whole lot of pressure outside of those two guys. And even though Jordan Hicks has some history of being a blitzing linebacker, the Vikings did lose someone with a really good history of being a blitzing linebacker in Anthony Barr that Mike Zimmer used all the time. There's not, and Harrison Phillips doesn't rush the passer. Dalvin Tomlinson doesn't rush the passer. So the answer kind of has to be that they are on the team, or you're going to have a lot of problems with your defense, a lot of the same problems that they've had over the last couple of years when Danielle Hunter got hurt. I would lean toward they are both on the team, because I think it would take some really serious injuries for Za'Darius Smith for the Vikings to say, nope, that didn't work, and we're just out. Like if he played five games and got one sack or something, then I think they would maybe just bite the bullet on that one. But, you know, Danielle Hunter, I don't think there's a ton to say that the injuries of the last 2 years are predictive. Za'Darius Smith, back surgery, and presumably a failed physical in Baltimore. Yeah, that's red flags all over the place. Torn pec, a thing that happens in football, random, kind of just, you know, a thing.
And really unconnected to the like neck hernia thing, you would think, for the at least mostly.
Right. Like more bad luck than it was. This guy has like a serious concern about him going out. If Danielle Hunter is any shade of Danielle Hunter, 10 sacks, let's say, they're paying him, right? I mean, this team does not seem to be super fundamentally different, right down to the fact that in June they're looking at another defensive lineman. That to me would say that they're going to go to him if he has a good year and say, all right, let's do that long-term contract we've been talking about for a while. So I think that the answer is probably that they're both much more likely, but there is always the other scenario. Za'Darius doesn't stay super healthy, and Danielle, even if he does, says, guys, I'm out. I'm not going to sign a long-term contract extension. I'm tired of this. But the fact that Danielle has let it drag out this long, to me, says he must like the fishing up here or something. Like, I don't know what it is, but he's had every right to push them to the brink when it comes to this contract. He just hasn't really done it.
Yeah, I mean, we've had the like Danielle Hunter contract talks for the past couple years now, and it's gotten resolved. They've kind of last offseason they kind of kicked the decision down to this offseason, and then this year they just restructure it and it all kind of went away quietly. So yeah, I mean, he just has the one more year on his contract after this one. If he is like Danielle Hunter and stays healthy and plays really, I mean, he's only 27 still. Like, I think it's a no-brainer with how important pass rush is in the league that you want to keep him around for a long time.
And the fact that they did not draft a pass rusher, which a lot of us had as something that they might do in the first or second round. And So it's not like there's a next guy on the way.
No, and I don't think like, yeah, I mean, you try to have like in every sport, like people coming up from younger prospects and like a farm system. I am not particularly confident in any of the DJ Wanhams or Patrick Jones, or we haven't seen anything from Janarius Robinson yet. Like you can't bank on any of those becoming a star pass rusher in the next couple of years. So you gotta keep your proven studs if you can.
I remember us making the case for a pass rusher at the combine where we talked a lot about it, and maybe the way the draft board fell, they couldn't get like a Kayvon Thibodeau or something, but it seemed like it wasn't really even a consideration to look for another pass rusher. So that would point me also in the direction of they think they're going to keep Danielle Hunter for a long time. All right. Next one comes from Jason via the email. Bleacher Report put out a trade every team must make article, June content, baby. They picked Patrick Peterson for a 6th-round pick to give the young guys time to play. Could you respond to this and perhaps your pick for a trade that the Vikings should make? I'll just go real quick here. Huh? What?
Patrick Peterson for a sixth? I want to read this because this question inspired me to go look up this Bleacher Report article. And they always do stuff like this where it's 32 slides, one thing for each team.
You click through all the slides to get to
No, I just scroll down to it wasn't slides. It was just like you just had to scroll or you just had to type in Command F Minnesota Vikings. So they said, and this is just like the second part of the blurb, by adding Andrew Booth Jr. in the second round, the Vikings rendered Peterson expendable. Meanwhile, Cameron Dantzler is an up-and-coming young talent coming off his best season yet, and Peterson turns 32 in July. Playing Peterson in his declining years brings almost little value. Instead, Minnesota, and specifically, they said trade him to the Cardinals, where he just came from in 2020. Instead, Minnesota should reunite Peterson with his former franchise in Arizona. The Cardinals need help at cornerback, but have limited cap space to make a deal. This trade would clear $2.38 million for the Vikings. Okay, so there's a bunch of weird things about that.
Can you tell me who wrote it? So if it's somebody who comes on the show, I won't go too hard.
I do not have it pulled up anymore. Ian Wharton. Okay. Which, like, there's a lot of great – I'm sure there's a lot of great stuff in this article. But there are two things that I just want to say as, like, we follow the Vikings very closely about what was said in that blurb. The one thing is that it just – I think it overestimates the Vikings' cornerback depth by a lot. Like, if you move Patrick Peterson and don't get a cornerback back who can play, you're talking about Cameron Dantzler is your number one cornerback. Andrew Booth Jr., a second-round rookie who has a, like, injury history that's like a CVS receipt, is your number two. And then after that, it's like – a Caleb Evans, who's a fourth-round pick, and Chris Boyd, and Nate Hairston, and Perry Nickerson, like replacement-level veteran cornerbacks. And cornerbacks get hurt a lot. Like, you need depth at that position. I was just I went back and looked at the 2020 season, and I was tracking this back then. Like, the Vikings, for the first 8 weeks of that year, did not have the same three cornerbacks play, like, lead them in snaps twice. Like, it was a different trio for the first 8 weeks, which was kind of ridiculous. And they had to, like, sign Chris Jones late in the year and people like that. So that's the one thing. And then the other thing is, like, specifically with Arizona, Patrick Peterson literally last summer was like, said he lost all respect for Steve Keim, their GM, with the way he handled his free agency. So I don't think that bridge is still, like, open. So that to me is, doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, take the Arizona part out of it. Like, with the approach that the Vikings have clearly said that they are taking, like, trading Patrick Peterson kind of decimates your cornerback depth. So that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. So I used to have to do articles like this when I wrote hockey for ESPN. That was kind of my thing, was it was like, you know, here's 32, or how many of our teams were in the league at the time, 30 trades that should be made at the trade deadline. And so I would spend hours poking through rosters, reading beat reporters, everything else, trying to come up with something reasonable, but there weren't even 30 guys who should be traded at the trade deadline. So it was all, and then I would get from fans, oh, why would you trade this guy for that guy? We would never do that, this and that. So I understand the challenge of trying to do something like this, a trade for sure, for every team. However, this is a miss. I mean, this is like, doesn't make sense on any level. Andrew Booth Jr., quote, I haven't been healthy since high school, is the guy that you're asking them to rely upon, and sending him back to the Cardinals. I think he'd just retire if they tried to trade him back to the Cardinals, considering the bad blood there with the way that he left. That doesn't really fit in any way. But, you know, there is a kind of something to be said for this, which is, if the Vikings had not extended Kirk Cousins, if, let's say, there was some crazy thing where they gave Cousins the extension and then Peterson comes back and then they decide, you know what? No, we're trading him away for somebody. Somebody gets desperate and they trade away Cousins and they're going to play Kellen Mond this year. Then you would trade Patrick Peterson and you would do a reset and you would look for trading everything that's not nailed down. And I would say, and this is not crazy because it's happened in recent history, if they were to start 1-5, Patrick Peterson is the first guy on the way out the door so Andrew Booth can play. Nothing they did this offseason indicated they should be trading veterans for anything. This team is trying to make the playoffs. They are trying to compete for a Super Bowl. They are trying to prove that everything was Mike Zimmer's fault. You don't do that by getting rid of a veteran cornerback. Like, in no universe do you start moving pieces now that are proven players who actually played pretty well last year in Patrick Peterson when you're not doing a reset of your organization. So there was a circumstance where this would have made sense to move a veteran to allow a draft pick to play, but it certainly doesn't now. And also check the recent history of rookie corners. It's not good. It's not good. It is very difficult for rookie corners to step up and play. And I mean, if you're asking a guy who's got a pretty serious injury history to do that too, you are just asking for Chris Jones to be here again.
Yeah. And no, I agree with you. I was reading this like as this is a trade that teams should make before the start of the season. And if in that context, it just doesn't make sense. Maybe if there was a time to do it, it would have been much earlier this year as part of an entire different approach to rebuild and try to plan for the future. And maybe it could happen if, like you said, if the Vikings start 0-7 or something and that forces them to pivot, it could make sense at that time. But right now, I mean, no, they're going all in. And the other thing I found in this article when I hit Command F Vikings is their suggestion for the Denver Broncos was to trade a second round pick for Eric Kendricks, which a second round pick is a lot more than a sixth, but Eric Kendricks is also a lot more of a valuable asset than Patrick Peterson as one of the best linebackers in the league. And again, I don't want to like, I'm not trying to pick on the guy who wrote this because like you said, it's basically an impossible task to like know intimately the, like what each team is trying to do and like the specifics of their roster and all that. So from that perspective, like, yeah, it's good content, but the thing with both Peterson and Kendricks, especially Kendricks, is like, it just doesn't make sense given the win now approach, because Eric Kendricks is still one of your best defensive players. I think he's going to be really vital to this, this Ed Donatell defense, one of the best pass coverage linebackers who can also stop the run, and just like a really good leader and a good person to have in the locker room too. So that would not compute at all with the let's go on a playoff run approach.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't want to get upset over June content for anything, anything. I almost tweeted you in Dominican Sue's pass rush win rate when you tweeted out about it, but I was like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to tell him. I'm not going to hurt his feelings. But you know, that's actually the thing with the fans only questions that sometimes I struggle with is that when someone comes in and says, hey man, or the predictions week we did, I think they're going to win 12 or 13. And like, I'm not raining on that parade. A, it's way too nice out. And B, I don't know, like that could happen. So then you try to figure out how it would happen. The same goes for this. Like, it's June content, so I'm not going to get upset, but you have to try to make it make sense in some way. Like, the Vikings are going to get to June after spending all this free agency money on their defense and trade away their veterans. What? Like, at least Google what they did in the offseason, man. I mean, come on. Yeah. Like, now if he had written this in March or February, now you've got something. Like, now there was a case to do things like this, but at this point, that's just bizarre. So we've spent way too much time on a fake trade. So I'll go to the final question.
Just say real quick that there was part of that question was if we could offer our pick for a trade the team should make. And I'll say very briefly, like, I don't think I would want the Vikings to give up, or I don't think it would make sense for the Vikings to give up any future picks to add a player right now, especially since they already traded their fourth round pick during the draft this year. So I would say if anything, like, maybe a position where you feel like you have a little bit of depth and you feel like you can maybe sell high, not really high on like a backup to get a pick back, like BC Johnson or Wyatt Davis or James Lynch, somebody like that. That would maybe be my suggestion, but I don't think they're going to make any major trades before the season starts.
Okay. I've got it. Kirk for Mayfield. Cleveland then turns Kirk around, trades him to Carolina. There's your trade. Yep. Mayfield plays it out with
Kirk
the Vikings.
Kirk for Baker straight up.
It was kind of a three-way trade.
Salary thing being
yeah,
the
kind of a three-way
offsetter.
Trade. Yeah.
Okay.
However, that would have to work. I don't know if it could, but that's the deal.
Also, breaking news. Purple Insider's Matthew Coller suggests Kirk Cousins traded to the Cleveland Browns.
I'm just saying. What's the difference in win total? Healthy Baker, Kirk. Healthy Baker with Justin Jefferson, very favorable offense, won 11 games just 2 years ago, plus not that expensive if you want to add a couple extra players here on the free agent market. I'm just saying, what's the win difference? Is it a lot?
Well, same exact team. I think Kirk maybe wins you another game or two, but Baker cheaper, more pieces, more money. Maybe that offsets it entirely.
Yeah, I'm just saying, just saying.
Just saying.
You know, I know Kwesi Adofo-Mensah is probably trying to take a vacation right now, but if he wants to use this trade idea, then he can. By the way, like Baker Mayfield, what is being talked about is just a complete nothing at this point. His career record, including having Freddie Kitchens as his coach once, 29-30. What does that sound like? Sounds like a 500 quarterback. Anyway, so let's go to the final question here. This is from listener X, who did not want me to say his name. He says, my brother and my dad love football, but they don't understand the X's and O's behind a given play. How do I go about dumbing down football when I watch film for several hours of the day as a high school football coach? I assume he means to explain how things work to his brother and dad, dumbing it down so they can understand what he's trying to say. He's a football coach. They're just regular Joe football men. What's your advice, Will?
Get them to play Madden. At a very basic level. I don't know. I feel like I, like as a kid, learned some things about the game beyond just like literally just watching what happened from playing Madden, from playing NCAA football. Like it'll teach you a little bit about like the base, like cover two and like blitzes and route concepts. And I mean, you're not going to, no, you're not going to get that much from it. So the more like, I don't know, nuanced answer would be just try to explain some of the basics and then go up from there, like man coverage versus zone and like stunts and twists and like 4-3 versus 3-4. What's 11 personnel? What's 21 personnel? And just like gradually go up to like coverage shells and RPOs and blocking schemes. I don't know. So I do think that my Madden comment was somewhat serious. That could help.
No, yeah, certainly Madden gives you a lot of the basics to understand football. It also depends on how much your brother and dad really care about what the X's and O's are. I mean, I know that a lot of people want to sit on the couch for the Vikings game and then go mow the yard and then come back in for Sunday night football. And like, that's the day. You and I both enjoy this when we have a Thursday night game to cover. And then there's Sunday. I'm not looking too deep at coverages. I'm just like tweeting stupid stuff and watching TV. Like, you know, there's plenty of value in just enjoying football for what it is. And maybe that's the answer to this is like, it's complicated, man. I asked Terrence Newman once, I was like, how can I better understand defenses? And he was like, look, you're not going to, because you're not Mike Zimmer and you're not me. However, if you look for two high versus one safety, that can tell you a lot. Look for how many pass rushers there are. That can tell you a lot. Look for like the offensive line, watch them, who blocked who missed the block and how that impacted a play. And you can understand what's going on out there a lot better. Look for certain, you know, receivers and the type of separation they create and little things like that. But more than anything, it is so complicated at the NFL level. So many things are going on at once. Every single play. I remember this with, there was a story about Belichick, how an assistant coach had written up a play and Belichick was like, all right, let's watch this one together, and spent like 45 minutes on this one play, going through every player's details of every assignment. So you can do that with football. And I like doing that with football as much as I can, and as much as we can learn from the players and write about it and everything else. But unless you really are a nut about football, you're probably going to just enjoy watching where the ball goes and enjoy the game. So I guess I would say maybe try dumbing it down for yourself and just watch, enjoy the game with your family. That's what I would say is don't take it too seriously. You don't have to every game. If your dad says, why didn't he catch that ball? You're like, well, look, it was a two deep shell and they did this. Like, just, you know, I don't know, man.
Yeah. It doesn't take any like knowledge of the X's and O's to like enjoy when someone makes a really cool run and jukes a linebacker or like makes a spectacular catch or a big hit or whatever. So you can just very much have some beers and watch the games and yell at the quarterback. And like, I mean, that's what I've done most of my life before I started like writing about it and trying to learn a little more. But if they do want to, like, if it's a thing where they want to learn a little bit more about the X's and O's, there are some basics that wouldn't be too hard to teach a little bit about. It could enhance somebody's appreciation of the game ever so slightly.
I think even from our perspective, what we often try to do is just connect to something that you can see right in front of you to write about. So a good example would be when Kirk Cousins explains play action. Well, I think it's pretty easy for fans to understand when he fakes the run, he's way better. And it's something that we as reporters can give you a little insight on. We don't write scheme articles, though. We don't go to some former NFL head coach and try to write up every single X and O and everything. It would be too confusing and it would just be frustrating. So I think that really it's like our role to try to look for small things. Maybe that's the best advice, is to look for small things and point them out every once in a while that somebody has seen and can connect to. Like, hey, look, watch how this cornerback plays this wide receiver. Look what he does there. That's a really good technique. That's what we teach our high school players. Like, I think that's probably the approach that reporters take of let's take something you've seen on TV, but maybe you haven't noticed, and ask the football players about it and have them explain it. So that is the best I can do. Well, did you have fun here? Your first fans only here, Will?
I did. Yeah, no, this is good. And I've been doing this, I think I've done it twice or something, where at the end of my show, I take some questions and hit them a little more rapidly than this. But this was fun to kind of dive into some of them and talk through them with another person.
This is one of my biggest issues, is that I will end up talking about one question for like 14 minutes and then be like, oh no, I still have 30 other questions that are in the Google Doc. But what really makes it go is how great the questions are. So if you've sent me a question, you're waiting on the answer, it's coming. I'm working through that. And if you want to send a question, purpleinsider.com, go to the contact us in the top right corner, send it there, or send me a DM or a tweet. I'll get it, throw it in the file, and we'll go through it. And maybe I'll share some with Will for his show as well. So I really appreciate you, Will. You're doing a great job with the Will Raggetts show. Had a lot of really good feedback on it, especially the Ben Lieber episode, which was just the other day. People should go check that out. And you're going to do another episode with Paul later this week. Yep. So a lot of Will. We also had Will Parkinson on the show yesterday. Lots of Will. Will to win on the show.
I love it.
A lot of Will. All right. Thanks, Will.